Blog Talk Radio.
This is what it is, okay? I said, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Not unlike the great martial artist and philosopher Bruce Lee, be like water, my friends. Be like water, my friends. Welcome to Grindhouse Sundays, courtesy of Afro Nerd Radio. This is the Comic Shop at 6 p.m. and, of course, Afro Nerd Radio at 7 p.m. Folks, give us a buzz. Don't be scared. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. For the first inning, we're going to talk about all things geek, nerd, sci-fi, science, fantasy, video gaming, you name it, we're going to talk about it. This time up, though, we're going to play a bit or a skosh of nerdcore, thanks to the great Daryl B., loading up our boards. This actually applies to yours truly. I have never watched Doctor Who again. The name of the cut, because we have to groove. I have never watched Doctor Who by the great Adam Warrock. Let's get to it, folks.
And I don't really understand what everyone is talking about. BBC don't even get in my house, so it seems that I'm living without a television show. Everyone's rushing about. They're like Doctor What? I'm like Doctor Who. And it's like a record stops in the room. Someone's supposed to care about a debonair dude who wears a bow tie, and everyone's watching it too. And I ain't here to hate. I mean, I really don't know enough info to join the debate. Do I have to watch episodes on videotape? I mean, didn't it start way back in 1978? Or maybe 1992? I mean, tell me, what am I trying to prove? I watch Firefly, I watch Freaks and Geeks, I watch All the Wire, and every day of the week, someone is telling me, hey Eugene, you watch a new episode of Doctor Who number 5,000. That never don't sound right to me. Why are you trying to pick a fight with me? Come on, man.
I don't even understand what anybody's talking about. Yeah, but I can sing this. I'll sing it.
I never watched Doctor Who like all the rest of my friends do. I know it's hard for you to believe. I don't understand your references. Like what a TARDIS is and something else about a time machine.
Man, I don't even know. I didn't even check the Wikipedia page. People seem to think because of my geeky ways. I watch a show about a dude who flies wearing a cape while competing in space with some kind of female companion and robots who keep on haranguing. Maybe they're evil, maybe they're nice, and I don't really know. Maybe they're all there just hanging. And doesn't he have the magic ability to use his coat to activate invisibility? And doesn't he stand sort of like 6'3" with hair falling down like bees on a willow tree? I mean, he could be a vampire, all I know. Blasting zombies while fighting crime on the down low. With an office in downtown Skid Row, checking out patients with his smart white gizmo. Working on Grease Lightning with Rizzo and playing basketball while being coached by Izzo. Waterboarding terrorists while chilling in Gitmo and looking Japanese warriors and shit though. I don't really know, cause I ain't never seen this damn show, so stop giving me crap, yo. Yeah, I'm sure it's great up on your TV, so anyone wanna lend me the damn DVDs, please? All, like, 30,000 of them, so I can spend the next year and a half watching Doctor Who. But I'm not bitter, y'all.
I never watched Doctor Who like all the rest of my friends do. I know it's hard for you to believe. I don't understand your references, like what a TARDIS is and something else about a time machine.
Yeah.
right now. That was something with our boards. Again, folks, my apologies. Too many phases going off at the same time. That was Adam Warrock. I have never watched Doctor Who. And I see that our friend of the show, Black Ronin, like myself, we have never watched Doctor Who. We'll get into that in a moment, actually, but I thought it was a pretty interesting record. Anyway, the gang's all here. I got to call up the captain. Captain, you are needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Your opinion's wrong.
And then, this is Daryl B. Daryl, what's up?
Hey, I've survived zombies, but I couldn't survive the Jack Daniels last night. And why am I in a red Star Trek uniform? Anyway.
Too much vodka, my friend. I'm just saying. All right, folks, again, welcome to the Comic Shop. It's presented by Afternoon Radio. Also, I believe this is Black Ronin. Let me bring him on in. Definitely a friend of the show. Let him sit on in. Ronin, is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Welcome, sir. Welcome, sir. Listen, we have
How
a lot
doing?
To get into. I just before we get into the topics, I thought I was the only Looney Tune that didn't see Doctor Who. I want to know Doctor Who, but I'm also very OCD-ish, very analish, and I know it goes back to 1963. That's a lot of research. I'm going to do it eventually.
You
know,
if
I can't get for the beginning, I want to have encyclopedic knowledge about most things. And I don't want to get in on it at, like, 2000. I want to get into it now. I want to know all that history before I go to the now. It's 50 years, practically. Next year will be 50 years I have to go through to get a thorough understanding of Doctor Who.
It's
a lot of work.
I'm with you, man. My buddy, I have a bunch of buddies of mine who watch the show, and that's all they talk about, and I'm just like, I just don't get it. You know, I try watching the episode here and there, but it's not enough for me to, you know, be sucked in like they are. Like, I mean, they're like really some of them really big fans, and I just can't get into it. There's too much.
I want to get into it. Daryl, you're silent on this. I know. I'm sure you have an encyclopedic knowledge about this thing. Can you go back to 63 on this?
I've watched just about every episode of Doctor Who. Hey, like I said, other people have reality television. For me, it's always been fantasy and sci-fi. Everybody liked police procedurals on TV. I was watching science fiction, whether it was Seven, whether it was all the British imports, I watched it. The thing I recommend to guys that are now coming into it is you start off with the Christopher Eccleston one from 3, 4, 5 years ago, all right? And then you do the Tennant. And that'll catch you up to the Smith one here. It's decidedly less to watch. But honestly, everything before 2005 does not matter. That's the way I look at it. But just like if someone wanted to get into Star Trek now, I would tell them, hey, the old series, that was good. But you know what? If you really want to catch up with today, you watch Next Generation and you watch Deep Space Nine. Why? Because those ones are more relevant to this time than the old ones were. That's the way I would phrase it to you. So the Eccleston, the Tennant, and the Smith Doctor Who's back.
Well, listen. Full disclosure, it's not like I have anything against Doctor Who. I want to know Doctor Who. I'm not afraid to go back. Listen, I can go back to silent film era science sci-fi. You know, Dr. Caligari and that kind of stuff. I love going back. It's just that to go back for episodic television is a little different than going back for a singular movie. That's the I intend in my head, I said one of these days I'm going to buy one of these multi-sets, these DVD sets. I say this in my head that I'm going to do it. One of these days, probably this Christmas, I'm going to make a vow to myself to pick up that early. I want to know the early stuff from the early UK television. It's just that I haven't gotten around to it because it's a task. It's a task.
Well, Amazon, 65% off. You can get sets up to 65% off. That's how I said it. I go like, yo, if you try to see the whole collection and you want to pay top dollar for it, are you mad? You can either go to Amazon, or we all know sites where you could they show them on. You may not get to keep them, but you could see them. Wink, wink, right, nudge, nudge.
All right, gentlemen, let's move ahead. Again, folks, you listen to The Comic Shop. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Talking about all things sci-fi, pop culture, geek, pulp culture, you name it. This time around, I want to speak about Looper with a bit more efficacy. Now, the reason why I say that is because Daryl sees everything, first of all. he may be the first mutant, perhaps. He sees everything. I wish I had his matter of fact, the captain has been very adroit in telling us who has the degrees and what. He says I have a master's degree in comic book knowledge. He has given Daryl, and rightfully so, a doctorate. And captain says he has an associate. So that's probably correct. I know a lot. Daryl seems to have this ability to see and know everything. He's the watcher. Anyway.
Wait for real.
So he saw Looper before we did. He spoke about it last week. The captain and myself, we finally got around to seeing Looper, and I was blown away. Now, I want the captain to come in first because the captain, he doesn't like, I don't say he doesn't like anything. He is far more discerning of a critic than I am. I go in there, I come out, I said, don't ruin this for me. Don't ruin this for me. Because I came out of Looper like, in my head, I'm like, whoa, this is Blade Runner Part 2. This is better. This is better than Blade Runner. Now, hold on. You know me. Hold on. See, here we go. Let me finish. I came out like, whoa. It had old R&B music in there. It had low-tech sci-fi. A lot of things were going on. It was Bruce Willis. You could have sworn he said yippee-ki-yay. He didn't do it, but it looked like he was going to do it. So I said, okay, hey, wait, this is vintage Bruce Willis. When I came out the theater, I was like, yo, this is Blade Runner 2012. He says, man, it was good. He was like, what? Don't ruin it. Captain, the floor is yours. Break it up. Break this down about your feelings about Looper. Don't ruin it for me, but break it down.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I thank you guys for valuing my opinion, and thank you. Thank you. Now, let me begin. First, I thought the movie was a very great concept, excellent from that standpoint. Also thought the acting was very, very good. If you didn't have these type of quality actors, you would not be able to pull this off. You have that going for it. The next thing is the fact that you see a lot in these futuristic movies that these individuals from time to time have powers. So the telekinetic factor was big also in the movie. That's excellent. That was nice. Now, here comes the but. Here comes the but with the movie. There's certain parts in the movie that you had a lot of dead spots. The movie was dragging. There was even one particular individual when I was talking to him afterwards about the bathroom. He said he fell asleep in certain spots. He had to get up and ask his wife. He said because it was dead. He thought it was flat. I said, I agree with you. Then also you had certain transitions that were very poor. You got the transition 15, 20 minutes down the line. The transition, just the way the director set it up, and also the editor, of course, it was kind of poor. Some of the transitions. So that took away from it. Also, the way it was written, you really didn't feel for the characters. And they did that on purpose. They didn't want you to feel for any of the bad guys. They didn't want you to feel for it. A lot of times, you see, like, you watch a movie like Batman, even though it's something different superhero, dealing with Nolan now, you feel for the characters. Because there's something always that you can get into that makes a person go bad. They just don't become a bad person. These characters you didn't feel for. You really didn't feel for these guys, you know? And that's what they wanted to do. And that's just the way of writing that some writers come over. That's the way. They say, you're a bad guy? I'm not going to feel for you. Some people feel that you should feel for every character. Me, personally, I feel the movie's better. There's an emotional connect. When you have an emotional connect, you automatically clips on your brain. You enjoy the movie more. There was no real emotional connect for me to the characters. So that somewhat took away from it. Now, you know, I have a highly, you know, I'm very critical on my scale. I have a 0 through 10 scale, and I always say from a 5 and up is a decent rating. 7 is a must-see. I gave The Last Batman an 8. I gave The Avengers a 9. I gave Avatar a 9. This movie, I gave a 6. 7 is a must-see. That's where I thought it fit in, based on that. That's my synopsis, gentlemen.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't really pay too much attention to the blind spots. I was thoroughly engaged. I have to admit, I was thoroughly engaged in this thing. I was most impressed, believe it or not, with the young actor, the child actor that played Sid, who, just as Daryl talked about last week, it poses the question of if you could kill Hitler as a infant or as a toddler, would you? And this it's essentially that question that this movie answers. So Hitler was, if you're going to use the term, if you're going to use Hitler as an analog, Sid was the character that could become this grotesque person in adulthood with these grand telekinetic powers. He was played by Pierce Gagnon. And this kid, he's probably one of the best child actors I've ever seen. For someone to be that young and to be able to emote the way that he did, certain things I was looking at with his facial expressions and how he was kind of we see precociousness with children. We've seen that before. But this kid was really throwing it down. His acting, and Catherine talks about this, the acting really brought this thing out. Sometimes Bruce Willis can be Bruce Willis. You know, what happens to an actor is that sometimes they become a character of themselves. You know, you can think of, I mean, listen, it just happens. As much, and I hate to say this, as much as I'm a big Jack Nicholson fan, at some point Jack became Jack. You know, there's a whole
in the 80s.
We saw you know, the empty chair last month. You know, Clint Eastwood becomes a caricature. So this one, Bruce Willis, it works. It works. This is where you see, okay, you know, sometimes you think there's not enough left in the tank with some people. This showed that there's stuff left in Bruce Willis's tank. So I will say right away, I was going to be very negligent about this movie because I love sci-fi and horror so much that I become very picky about it. When I see trailers, it's like, this is something I can figure out the beginning, the middle, and the end in 30 seconds of a trailer. I hate when that happens, and it turns me off. And I almost went that route with Looper. But the word on the street was so positive. I said, you know what? I'm going to see this thing. The captain, he does have a knack for making these things into events. So when he said, listen, this is it, I have to give credit where credit is due. I always do. He will say, and he hasn't really done me wrong on this, this movie is an event. We have to see this. Otherwise, I would go by these trailers. Sometimes the trailers throw me off, and I'm, you know, I can take it or leave it. I'll catch it on a DVD. I'll catch it on cable a year later. So, Daryl, you were saying?
I was saying that you both brought up a point that I failed to bring up last week, but it's a very valid one, all right? Oftentimes, when we see a kid in these type of films, and they have to do a lot of emotion, it's very endearing, like Newt in Aliens, or it really, like, gets you going, like the kid in Sixth Sense, you know, where you're like, okay, I hate this kid, just kill the kid off, you know? You never got that feeling here. The director really managed the kid very well in this because it didn't get a chance to annoy the audience, you know? And again, that if you watched all the trailers, you never saw the thing with the kid coming. They kept that
secret.
Yeah, I was
eating my kid, yeah.
Yeah, they really kept it, at least most of the major trailers. You never knew that. And that's what helped me really like the movie, because here's a sideways plot that actually became the main plot, which actually asked the philosophical question, and that's why I knew you two would eat this one up, because it would have you guys debating it for, like, days, you know? So, back to you, Effin Nerd.
You know, and something else, too, because we're going to go to a musical break quickly. But, you know, before the movie, actually, in the theater, of course you see all these, this roster of trailers. A whole lot of horror is coming out. And, you know, listen, I'm a horror fan of the shock horror from the 80s. That stuff that where I saw grown men, thugs. Thugs in Queens. I'm gonna actually go there. The captain knows about this. Thugs from let's say Jamaica. I'm being more local here for our local listeners. The Jamaica Avenue thugs, the Rochdale thugs. Okay, that crew from the 80s. I saw that crew during the 80s shock horror run like bitches. Running. I saw with my own eyes. Although I was looking, I will confess, I looked between my hands at some of this stuff, but I saw these people running. Raekwon and Shaquan were running out the theater for some of the stuff that I saw in the 80s. So I'm not impressed with the new millennium horror stuff. It's so over-the-top CGI. You know, we had Stan Winston, the late, great Stan Winston. Like, you think of The Thing. The Thing, I saw again, thugs screaming with Prince high notes, running out of the theater. Okay, I saw it with my very own eyes because this stuff, they could not handle it. So when I see stuff, these trailers, whether it's sci-fi, whether it's horror, it they're so lame sometimes. Daryl knows about this stuff. Yeah. You have to sift through it. So this is a jewel. So the listening audience, Looper is a jewel. I'm curious, before we go to the break, going around the horn, do you think this might become an actual classic the way, you know, we think of the way we think of Blade Runner as a classic? Do you think this might ultimately become a sci-fi classic?
Too soon to tell. But this, just like Chronicle before, it snuck up on a lot of people. And it snuck up on fans of the genre because they didn't, from looking at it, you don't think it's a sci-fi movie. You're thinking, oh, they're just saying they use time travel, but it's actually a period piece. You don't look at it as a sci-fi movie that incorporated a lot of sci-fi themes in it. So you never know. It just depends. Hey, I don't know where they could take this, but it, like I said, it's just like Chronicle. It snuck up on a lot of people. You went in thinking one thing, and it all of a sudden hits you sideways.
Captain, you think this is going to be a classic? Potentially.
I agree with Daryl. It's too soon to tell. You never know what time tells with this. It has the chops as far as that. But you have to remember, when Blade Runner even dropped in those days, they didn't think it was going to be anything. It's like, you know? And then years later, because everything came out of Blade Runner, it became such the movie that you had to go see. You know? So we'll see what happens. 8 years from now. You don't have to wait 20 years anymore. You know, 8 years from now, you will see.
Black, what do you think?
I haven't seen it yet. I do really want to see it now, just hearing more from you guys about the movie and everything. This circumstances have prevented me from going to see the film. So hopefully next week, if it's still in the theaters, I'll try to catch it and everything. I think I agree with Captain and Daryl. Is this too soon? Stuff like that, you never know. So you start seeing people imitate it, take pieces from it, and start copying. That's when you know when it's a classic. That's pretty much what happens, like Captain was saying. You know, people start borrowing from it a lot. And we won't know that till like 8 years, like you said, about 8 years from now, when you start seeing people taking bits and pieces here from that, and maybe Chronicle as well. I'm pretty sure people will start taking pieces from that pretty soon. So,
or even if they parody it, like the way Matrix has been. Matrix is definitely a classic because, you know, it's a part of, it truly is a part of folklore, a part of pop culture.
Yeah.
So maybe you're right on that. If we start seeing glimmers of this thing, they start breaking it apart and start, you know, frame by frame, and you start seeing certain things, that's when you know it has arrived. So maybe you're on point on that. Daryl, quickly.
And I'm just saying like this. If you think about it really hard, the movie had plenty of times where it could have gone schlocky. It could have gone sci-fi movie of the week, you know, with the scenes. but it's a testament to Levitt and Willis that they never overacted in it. They acted like themselves, yes, but they remained stoic. They didn't go over the top. They didn't ham it up. They didn't Christopher Walken this. You know, they didn't Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face this. You know, they played it like it was a serious, serious movie, and it ended up being a serious, serious movie.
Yeah, exactly. All beef, no ham. That's what I think we saw here. All right, gentlemen, let's go to a quick groove when we get back. I want to talk about something. Once again, I am correct with my opinion.
Oh, here we go.
About this Prometheus DVD. Prometheus and Blade Runner sitting in a tree. Okay, there's something going on that I think is pretty interesting about these two mythologies perhaps merging. So we're going to talk about this. Thanks to the Brits on the British DVD, there's a Easter egg about Blade Runner and Prometheus. So we got to talk about this. Thanks to Daryl for the new Muzak. This is Thought Criminals. Roll for initiative. Roll for initiative. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's hold on.
So how you want to start this?
Okay, folks, we're back giving you the best of Nerdcore Muzak, thanks to Daryl B. This is, of course, the Thought Criminals, Roll for Initiative, folks. Roll for Initiative, the Thought Criminals. Getting back into the fold, I want to talk about Prometheus, this new Prometheus DVD. While taking a quick cyber walk through comicbookmovie.com, again, to the listening audience, comicbookmovie.com, and they had an entry on this Easter egg by way of the latest Prometheus DVD, only by my friends in the UK. They have a Steelbook, well, I should say they have Steelbook editions in the UK, which I'm hearing now, very popular, very well received. So with the Prometheus Steelbook edition, there's an Easter egg that points to a memo
that one of the characters creates or created that is pretty blatant about there being a connection to Prometheus /aliens, that mythology is intertwined with the Blade Runner mythology. So this memo has been lighting up the internet for the last day or so, and I find it pretty fascinating. And I don't know how the time, you know, the time factors measure up, but Hollywood's going to make it work. This is from the mind of Ridley Scott, mind you. So I'm just curious as to what your thoughts are about this. And also, there's something else that Captain brought up that I've been looking up on the internet as well, about the Charlize Theron character perhaps being a transgender person. That went through my head. That's beyond me. I think I have an answer to that, though. I think I have an answer to that. That's secondary. Let's get into this thing about this memo. Matter of fact, let me read the memo quickly. Okay. If you remember to the audience, this is spoiler alert. I'm sorry. This movie's been out for like 5 months, so damn you if you haven't seen it.
Right. I haven't seen it, man. That's okay.
Seriously? Well,
yeah, man. The circumstances.
Listen, trust me, I haven't seen everything. The DVD's coming out this Tuesday.
I'm going to try to pick it up this Tuesday, yeah.
Anyway, the...
Well, at least get the bootleg.
The bootleg's out now.
Yeah.
I'm not saying where. Anyway, one of the characters in the movie who ends up being revealed later on in the movie, and I'm not going to tell you too much, Black, but
okay, appreciate
this
it.
This character played by Guy Pearce, he is a captain of industry. He's the one that basically subsidizes their expedition to this planet. It comes to find out that in a memo, I don't know if you want to call him, well, this captain of industry, that it was friends with the other captain of industry in the Blade Runner universe that created all those replicants. Now, you know, this is not taking anything away to Black, you know this, that in Aliens mythology, androids coexist with humans fairly comfortably. We've seen this. We've seen androids, but they're not replicants, mind you. And this memo makes the distinction between the androids and the replicants. Let me read this quickly. This is the memo specifically from Peter Weyland. Peter Weyland is the character that Guy Pearce plays in Prometheus. Okay. Weyland, of course, is in charge of Weyland Industries.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
He
says in the memo, a mentor and long-departed competitor once told me that it was time to put away childish things and abandon my toys, he puts in quotes. He encouraged me to come to work for him, and together we would take over the world and become the new gods. That's how he ran his corporation, like a god on top of a pyramid overlooking a city of angels. Of course, he chose to replicate the power of creation in an unoriginal way by simply copying God. And look how that turned out for the poor bastard. Literally blew up in the old man's face. Now, let me go to one more sentence and listen to this closely, my audience. He says, I always suggested he stick with simple robotics instead of those genetic abominations he enslaved and sold off-world. Although his idea to implant them with false memories was, well, amusing, is how I will put it politely. So this is definitely Blade Runner. This is definitely Darryl, what was the name of the corporation in Blade Runner?
I couldn't tell you offhand right now. You're more the Blade Runner expert, but like I said,
I can't think. I thought of it yesterday. Now I can't think. I can't remember what it is.
But like I said, for us, this is it's a big deal. because it'll be for other people that don't know about shared universes and all of that. But to us, this isn't that big of a deal. We kind of knew this. And even in the first Alien, we all knew that Ridley Scott was behind the first Alien, right? And we all knew he had plans for the Blade Runner series. We were talking about it back then in limited pockets of geekdom. So, you know, that's why I don't consider it as big a deal as you, because, hell, we've been doing the shared universe thing as comic book fans for how long?
Forever.
You know? Yeah, this will be a revelation to those who are either A, now just getting into it, or B, not realizing that you could join movies like that. But, you know, there's been several shared, Bionic Woman, Million Dollar Man, or $6 Million Man, you know, Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is actually, they made allusions to there that the Wonder Woman series was in that, the television series that is, was in that universe. You know, hell, even Michael Bay didn't hide that the battleship thing could have been in the Transformers universe. You know, because of some comments made in that. And hell, who didn't watch the original Transformers by Bay and see that, oh, those are some of the same sets that are used later by or the Ewan McGregor joint where there were clones and stuff like that. Hell, in the animated universes, we joined G.I. Joe Transformers.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why I'm saying this one isn't as big as what your next point is going to be. That one is a little bit bigger.
Well, you know, listen, it's fair for you to talk about what we experience as comic book fans. I mean, there's crossovers all the time. But when it comes down to serious sci-fi, this is a Philip K. Dick story initially. Do androids dream of electric sheep? I think because it's an adaptation of Philip K. Dick's story that maybe they can expand the universe like that. But you know, in all fairness, Darryl, it's from the comic book that allowed there to be an Alien and Predator crossover.
I mean, that's good
normally,
point.
I think it's a good thing. But do you think I'm going to take this to the captain? Do you think all this cross pollination and sci-fi on this level cinematically? Do you think it cheapens the brand? Because now you have, if you're going to bring Blade Runner into the Aliens universe, that means by proxy you have to bring in Predator. All this is coexisting at the same time. Is that cheaping the brand? This is the captain.
Well, you don't necessarily have to bring in Predator. We might want to see that, but you don't necessarily have to bring in Predator, the Predator situation. The potential here can be huge if it's done well. And we know Ridley Scott can do things very, very well. With the whole Prometheus situation, the only reason why I went to see it was because it was Ridley Scott. If it was another director, I might not have probably went, because it was so after the time. I was like, but it's Ridley Scott. So if you have the right people involved and you want to do cross-universe situation, cross-pollinization, it can be awesome. If you bring some slag, some slouch, that only does a decent product, you're going to walk away and say, oh, you might as well have left it alone, because now you're ruining both universes. But if you can bring to the table something that the audience will walk away and say, oh, man, it's always worth doing. Now, the potential here, now, you know, potential is one of the most overrated and overused words in humanity. We know that. But let's just use it anyway. The potential here is incredible. Because now just imagine, even though Harrison Ford is not going to do it, let's say, hypothetically, you get Ridley Scott now as a director, Harrison Ford, you loop time around, and then somehow he's chasing replicants out into space, and he ends up on a planet. Sorry to spoil it a little bit for you, Ronan. but he ends up on the planet that the Ripley-like character was heading to at the end of Prometheus. That's a big movie right there. That's incredible right there. You just link two universes. The internet will go crazy. The geeks will go crazy. The nerds will go crazy. General audience will go crazy. Like, what is going on here? And then also what happens is now because of that, because you have a Ridley Scott-type director, you have to go all the way back in time and watch all the other movies. So that generates income from them. And this is how these people think. So the potential can be very big if you bring in the right people. You just can't let any Joe Neckbone go ahead and go do it. So that's my point on it.
Just to the audience, the corporation that was in Blade Runner was the Tyrell Corporation. Eldon Tyrell was the gentleman that you saw. I mean, it's a 30-year-old film now. The gentleman that was the bespectacled guy that ends up getting killed, kissed and killed, which is disturbing when I saw that when I was a kid. kissed and killed by Rutger Hauer's character. It says he essentially is Peter Weyland's mentor. So I find that that whole exchange is pretty interesting. Now, can we get Terminator in this? Can we fit that in? I'm just wondering. Why stop?
See, now he's going too far. Now he's going too far. But,
you could actually bring in Looper if that's the case. Hey,
Terminator and Matrix are linked.
You have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, yo. Don't we know? I see it. Robocop becomes Terminator.
Daryl would burn down the theater if that happened. Daryl would burn down the theater. Forget about it.
This is part of the reason why I say that if you put Squadron Supreme in the second Avengers movie as Thanos' thralls, we'll get that JLA movie much, much faster.
Yes. 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 You're actually making sense, Daryl.
But first, though, you'd have to explain to the audience who and what is Squadron Supreme.
Yeah.
No. Just by the look of the characters on the screen, I think people will figure out, oh, my God, the Avengers are taking on the Justice League. I know their name's out, but that's the Justice League. How is DC and Warner Brothers going to react? That will destroy the internet right there.
It'll blow it up.
quickly before we go to the Charlize Theron thing, I want to stay on that. I don't want to talk about it too much because I know that Ronan hasn't seen it. But we do know that we are on track for there to be a Blade Runner reboot. I mean, first of all, I don't even know if Prometheus is. They haven't really classified it as is it a prequel? Is it a reboot? We don't know really what it is. So if Ridley Scott's going to go back into this well again. Is it safe to say that with the new Blade Runner, that this may not be a reboot, may not be a prequel? It might lend itself to being just a totally different thing with shadows of the first Blade Runner, just like Prometheus is giving you shadows of aliens. Does it stand to reason, like what Captain's talking about, that maybe we might see with Blade Runner, there being some kind of connective tissue here? Do you think it's feasible that he's going to go in this direction since there's going to be a reboot for Blade Runner? Daryl, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, everything's feasible. You know, we're at an age where everything's in play. Everything's in play. You can never use the word anymore, can't. Everything can possibly be made now. You just have to, like Captain said, you have to get the right director behind it, a guy that shares the vision, a guy that wants to do it. It is possible, and that's a beautiful thing.
Question, wasn't there some kind of, I'm just putting it out there before people jump on me, wasn't there a crossover with Terminator, though, in the comic books? There was a crossover with Terminator and somebody else, some other property.
There's been a couple.
Terminator
and
RoboCop.
Yep, he started with RoboCop. There was a Terminator Aliens book. There's been more than a couple.
Ooh, Terminator Aliens. Terminator Aliens.
Check out Dark Horse's archives. Terminator's crossed over with a bunch. They were the only character from Ridley Scott / that cinematic universe that I don't know he's contacted is Predator. But everybody else, he's crossed over, at least in Dark, when the Wild Dark Horse has had the license.
Oh, one more question. You know, since we've seen an Aliens Predator crossover movie, will there have to be some kind of hint of it in other properties? Like, you know, Robert Rodriguez brought back Predators a year ago, 2 years ago. So I think you're talking about there being another Predators movie. Will there have to be some kind of? I mean, even in the next Prometheus thing, will there have to be some kind of Predators acknowledgement in some way? I mean, hasn't this crossover kind of made it where they have to be acknowledged at some point?
No, just because what we're speaking about here, how many people you think have studied the material long and hard like we have looking at this? The average dude on the street, they go like, oh, there's a link? I never noticed that before. You know, I know people that have bought these DVDs and have, like, I don't even bother to watch the extras. I don't care to know. All I care to know is watch the film on hand. To guys like us, oh, my God, stop the world. To those people, it's another thing.
All right, quickly, and I don't want to talk about this so heavily, but because I don't want to really ruin it for Ronan. But the Charlize Theron character, Captain brought this up to me, and it went past me. This whole thing, I don't even know if Daryl picked this up. This whole notion that the Charlize Theron character, who ends up being Weyland's daughter, I just mentioned Weyland of Weyland Industries, that his daughter was played by Charlize Theron in this piece, is not. It's gaining ground on the internet that she might have been a transgender person. Did you pick that up, Daryl?
You know what? It was an early discussion on some of the websites before it was talked about recently. It was when the movie came out. Some of us that dissected the film saw the scene with the robot. Again, I'm not gonna give it. And we took it the other direction. So you're saying Idris Elba slept with a man. Are we talking Crying Game here? You know, we took it in that direction. But I put it like this. Hey, it's the future. You know what? If you have the technology, anything can happen. It's a different time. You know, we like to view all this stuff through current sensibilities, but in the future, we saw it in Star Trek a lot, where you would come across alien races where it was normal for both someone to be born with both male and female organs.
Riker get with somebody like that?
Yeah.
Didn't Riker get with some alien creature who could be either male or female? I remember that one episode. It came to my mind now that you mentioned it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, guys, this. You're looking at this so unusual. You're thinking, oh, it's PC. No, it's the future. Come on. You can't be scared of the future, y'all.
So listen. So I got a replicant to the left of me, then I got a transsexual to the right of me
in the future,
you know. And then I have my real woman on another planet. Okay.
The only thing is, you know, emphasis on technology. When Daryl talks about technology, it's because of her character having her own personal technology that was configured for a male that led people to think, wait a minute, why does she have this device that's configured for a male if she is a female? However, this is to the captain. I think it might have been just a drop plot point, but if you remember – the fact that Weyland, the captain of industry, he reveals himself later on in the movie where you didn't even know he was on the ship. So it would stand to reason that he would need that device because no one knew he was there. He's the male.
That's what people are saying, to pick up that missing plot point where people are thinking, because she was hiding something. Now, some people are theorizing she was hiding her maleness. Others are theorizing, and you saw that she really was hiding, that the crew thought that Waylon was some old guy that died. He was cryogenically frozen on the ship. So that's why I think that's the male she was hiding, not her own maleness, I think. But I could be wrong.
Can I interject?
Yeah, go ahead.
She didn't know he was on the ship.
But it was his ship, though, still. Still
his
ship.
She didn't know he was on the ship.
Oh.
She didn't know that he was on the ship.
Listen, I'm trying to help out Idris Elba. I'm trying to help him.
That's the thing. She didn't know he was on the ship. That flies perfectly if she knew he was on the ship.
I'm trying to research through the time space continuum that he got it with the chick. I'm trying to
okay.
help out.
Okay. Well,
right.
We don't want to spoil it anymore for Mr. Rodin.
No, I just look at it this way. This is why I love sci-fi. This is why I love fantasy and sci-fi. We can have a conversation about one thing, and now it's called radically into another place, but that's it. The ideas are endless. This is what we tried to tell Hollywood, and Hollywood still doesn't get it.
Quickly, I want to do a quick transition. Not a transgender, but a transition.
Dear God.
All right, listen. More fallout. Maybe I'm using the wrong word, but I'm going to say more fallout from DC 52. Actually, I was thinking about this when I was writing up this issue, this title. I'm sorry, this topic. You know, we always use the term retconning or retro continuity to listening audience. It means when you have a mythology in comic books, and then all of a sudden you change things around, you change an origin around. It's called retro continuity or retroactive continuity or retconning, as they say. With DC 52, is it called retconning now, or is it, as I created it, proconning? Is it retconning or is it proconning? Now, the reason why I say that is because the latest Flash comic, I think 1 or Flash 0 came out last week, and it went a little deeper into Flash's origin. For all those who are familiar with the Flash, the Scarlet Speedster, he gets doused with these chemicals, and he becomes super fast. He got doused with chemicals, all right, but in this one, he was in the hospital for a long time, and they thought he was going to die. So they changed things around with this retconning now. It's a little different, and in this 52 continuity, there's no Wally West yet. Do you think we will see Wally West coming up, Kid Flash, or the future Flash, will we see that? And also, is this truly retroactive continuity, or is it pro-continuity? Daryl?
I look at it this way. They've already retconned Tim Drake. They've retconned the Titans. In the short time they had it right here, they retconned the Titans as it relates to Red Hood and the Outlaws. They've already retconned parts of Batman's past here to suit a new thing, but they still get their own through Batman Incorporated. Until they get together and decide what they're going to do, I can't name it. My name for it is chaos. So, this is why I constantly say, with stuff like this, okay, this is where having a joint universe is bad. If you let somebody make a bad decision on one end, it taints your product too. That's all I've ever wanted from DC. Yo, get your editors to work together, because the idea can't work if everybody's on the same page, which they're not. And this proves it. And also, you know what? I've learned with DC, be careful what you wish for. I want Wally back. I want Donna Troy back. And what's in this universe be like the natural born killers or something? Back to you, Ephraim.
Well, listen, you know, I want to pitch the ball back to you again, Daryl, because listen, retro means going back to something that once was. You know, the whole concept of retro, but this isn't retro, is it? When it's a totally different. I mean, even psychologically, one thing that I think might have held back the geeks when it comes down to retconning stuff is anytime you change something, you always felt like there was a connection to what once was. This new universe has no connection. I mean, this new Earth 2 has no connection to the Earth 2 of the past. And you have totally different characters, different costumes. I mean, it has to feel like it is a real reset. It's a reset. I don't think we're going to go back to all that old continuity. This is a true reset, and you can't go back. So, it's so different that we don't even know if Wally West exists. What do you think about that?
And that's a good point, but again, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, DC, when it comes to these things, they have a lot to prove. There's still a lot on the table with this concept. I mean, it makes for you're not trapped in the box in terms of ideas, but until they start thinking of it that way, we're going to get trapped in a box of ideas again.
What about the Joker? The Joker returns. You know, listen, the Joker's a stale character to me. You know, that Batman, even I agree with the Red Hood, kill him already at some point or do something with him. He never escapes every week. So, but they're saying this is going to be, I guess, somewhat of a different Joker. I mean, what does the Joker do in this new universe? Who is he?
Well, they pulled his face off, or excuse me, they pulled his smile off, which, you know, that's kind of gross to think about in retrospect. But, hey, let's see if these guys can have a different idea of the Joker because, you know, they've messed up with this concept oh so much, you know, that hey, we have the debate on here all the time. For as many people as the Joker has killed, he should have gotten two to the back of the head already.
Yeah. Yeah, heck, you referenced the Squadron Supreme. Even in J. Michael Straczynski's reboot of the Squadron Supreme, Supreme Power, even that Batman analog, who I identify with, Nighthawk, I like that character. He eventually offed his Joker. That Joker is dead. At least we're led to believe he is dead. Not the same thing with the DC stuff. So I think that's probably a distinction between Marvel and DC in some regards. Gentlemen, we got about less than 2 minutes remaining. Dow, quickly, you wanted to give some kudos to Green Lantern. You have a write-up. Folks, go to AFNR.com for Daryl B's latest blog entry. And he has, I guess you're kind of going back on Green Lantern. You know, you thought it kind of sucked, but now you're saying it's probably one of the best things on TV now, Green Lantern animated series.
Again, I've seen my share of bad cartoons that have come down writing wise, Ben 10 Omniverse. You know, I've seen my bad share of writing as it's come down the pipe. But I gotta give it to Green Lantern. They're giving the older fans what they want and seeing these characters, old time characters that they love, like we got Salak and Tomo Ray in this last one. They're giving us geeks what we want. And yet, they're writing it so it is very kid-friendly. Now, I hate the animation. I hate that animation with a passion. As much as people hate it, like how the Japanese did the Final Fantasy and the Resident Evil animation, like that computer blocky animation. But you know what? The writing is there. I can't F with the writing. The writing's been top-notch. So you know what?
All right, listen.
Green Lantern, kudos.
Okay, we're going to have to close the shop, gentlemen. We'll be back again next week. The immortal question will be for Green Lantern, of course. Will Razor shag that hot cybernetic female robot? That's my main question. Will he shag Oa? What's her name? Not Oa. What's her name? Daryl?
Female
robot? Aya. That's all I care about. All right, but gentlemen, we're going next door for Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. It's been real. We'll do it again next week. Thanks, folks. Thanks, gentlemen. Next week.
Good luck, guys.
Spock with a beard?
I think not. Your name is Toby. I want to hear you say it. Your name is Toby. You're going to learn to say your name. Let me hear you say it. What's your name?
Kunta. Kunta Kinte.
When the master gives you something, you take it. He gave you a name. It's a nice name. It's Toby. And it's going to be yours till the day you die. Now, I know you understand me. And I want to hear it. Again! What's your name?
Toby.
Hi. Say it again. Say it louder so they all can hear you. What's your name?
Toby. My name is Toby.
Hi. That's a good nigga.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lot of...
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Plus years later, folks, Roots is still a powerful example of acting and pathos, incredible acting there from LeVar Burton. Folks, welcome to Grindhouse Sundays, part two. This is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternoon Radio. We are expecting friend of the show, author, journalist, and now Afro Nerd political contributor, Norman Kelly. He's going to come through in a few moments to talk about, you guessed it, the political debates from last week. We've got to get into it, folks. Before we get into the discourse with Mr. Kelly, we've got to get into some powerful groove, folks. Powerful groove. I'm not playing with our audience. Trust me on this. This is Pain, Pain by the legendary Ohio Players. And you know what? Time to groove.
Got to be, got to be.
game by the Ohio players. Folks, you can't handle that. You can't handle that. I don't think so. I think you would prefer Drake. Drake, who incidentally, in all respect to Drake, I don't think people know this. Drake is the nephew of Larry Graham, one of the original Funksters. But you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it. Drake is Drake Graham. That's his name. He is his nephew and knows nothing of the funk. I'm just saying. Anyway, folks, welcome to After Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Speaking of the captain, Captain, as always, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it, sir.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now let's open it up to debate. Let's get it started.
Yes, once again, we're expecting Mr. Norman Kelly. We had him on a few times. Excellent guest. He wrote several books. One book was called Rhythm in Business. The other one was called Head Negro in Charge Syndrome. Because of his appearances, he's so well received, so knowledgeable, that the audience had a reaction to him. So we had to bring him back, and we were expecting him momentarily. He's going to be a monthly contributor to our program, so he's going to be our official political correspondent, and it would be apropos for him to weigh in on last week's debates with Governor Mitt Romney, and President Barack Obama. So, you know, actually, while we wait for him, I think we should play a clip, Captain. I want to play a clip regarding the debates from the
Absolutely.
Young Turks.
Absolutely.
If I can find the clip, where are we?
Got to play the clip of the clip, because there's many clips. So let's play the clip of the clip. I think that's him calling him right
yes,
now.
Sir. Yes. You know what? Hold on. Let's bring the gentleman in. I don't have all the fanfare for him like I normally do. Do you have the applause button handy, Captain?
No, I do not. Let's have it up.
All right. He knows how we feel. So let's bring in Mr. Kelly. Now, why is the board locking up on me now? Here he is. Norman,
hello.
Mr. Kelly.
Hi.
Welcome to AfroNerd once again. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm sorry if I'm a bit late. I was trying to call in, and I was not getting any cooperation for the entity formerly known as Ma Bell.
Oh. That's all right. That's all right. Listen, we need you on this program. Here we go. Finally.
Thank you.
All right. You know what? First up, you know, I think you have something to share with the audience, so I want to give you your due respect. You have a Kickstarter campaign. Could you go into that for a moment?
Actually, Indiegogo, which is the competitive platform, crowdfunding platform of Kickstarter. Anyway, as you may have known in your audience, I'm basically in the middle of a production on a film called How Washington Really Works, The Life and Times of Charlie Peters, which is a film about the founding editor of The Washington Monthly and The Washington Monthly. We have filmed about 8 hours of footage for a 30-minute film, and we're using Indiegogo as a crowdfunding platform to raise an initial $6,000 to begin the editing. We have 25 days to raise $6,000. So if you're interested in good journalism and about a man whose magazine launched some of the best reports, please go to indiegogo.com/H as in Harry, W as in White, R as in Robert, W as in White, and just go there and check out the film that we're doing. We have a little trailer. Or you can go to the charlieproject.com. That will direct you to the Indiegogo campaign. Or you can go to facebook.com, the Charlie Project. And we have 25 days to raise $6,000, and we could use people's support.
Okay.
Thank you.
Not a problem, and we'll do our part to push your project as well. Our Twitter and Facebook and our audience, I'm sure, will also contribute. So the best of luck with your project, by the way.
Thank you.
On that point. All right. We had you on, obviously, because of your knowledge base. So I want to talk about the debates, but before we get into it, actually, I have a clip from the Young Turks. Cenk Unger, I think, is a MSNBC employer.
He also has a former
employer. Actually, he's with what is the other
current
outfit?
Well, he's current. Now, yeah.
Right. So he's still on Young. He still has Young Turks on YouTube,
yeah.
And he's going in on this whole Obama debate alleged fiasco. We'll get into our thoughts about this thing. Let's go to the clip first, and then we'll discuss it. This is the Young Turks on President Obama's debate. Hold on, folks.
Just for those who either didn't catch the debate or think that we're overplaying how badly Obama did, JR has a couple of compilations, and one I think in particular will show how I don't say lazy because now I sound like I'm on Fox News, but how tired and put off, and it kind of makes you believe what Al Gore was saying about altitude sickness. Why don't we go to video 3 for an example of how Obama actually did.
That may not.
It's rough. That was half the debate we just watched.
He talked 5 minutes more than
exactly.
Everybody who heard that statistic that Obama spoke 5 minutes more than Romney does not believe it. Because the debate seemed, I talked to my father afterwards, they're like, well, Obama couldn't get a word in. That Romney kept talking.
No, because
he
used time wisely.
You're 100% right. It's because he talks so damn slowly, and he's so careful with his words. Michael Hirsch made a good point today, now at the National Journal. He said it sounded like one of his press conferences, but you're not at a press conference. You're at a debate. It's different. You can't just sit there and lecture to the reporters, this, and he's carefully craft your words. Get in there. Get in the fight.
And how much of this, this is an important point that I need to make here. Let me start by saying, well, there's a couple of important points I need to just save them.
It's to be presidential.
Yes, but this is.
I know.
But he doesn't need to be presidential. The other guy needs to be presidential. He's the president. He's for
That's
4 years. He's acted like the president, except for the part about being black.
Well, so speaking of Fox News. So now, look, the other part that drives me crazy about President Obama is his constant agreement with the Republicans. And we've got a compilation on that, too. It's clip 2. Now, look, I've been saying this for 4 straight years. Now, I think I'm right overall. But certainly, in the middle of a debate, you don't want to do this.
Yeah, Governor Romney and I both agree that our corporate tax rate is too high. I suspect that on Social Security, we've got a somewhat similar position. I appreciate, and it appears we've got some agreement, Governor Romney and I, we both agree that we've got to boost American energy production. I suspect Governor Romney and I probably agree on it. We've made enormous progress drawing on ideas both from Democrats and Republicans. This was a bipartisan idea. In fact, it was a Republican idea.
No.
He's been doing that for years, though.
No,
right.
I know. And I know what he wants to go for. Hey, I'm the centrist. I'm the bipartisan guy. I'm not the radical. Those guys are the radicals. I get it. You can overdo it, and you could certainly overdo it in a debate where you want to set contrast instead of, golly, gee, I agree with Mitt Romney so much. And when you start a sentence that way, you send a subconscious signal to the audience that the other guy is right.
Because
Romney is not saying throughout the debate, I agree with President Obama. I think the Democrats are great. I don't know. And that, you know, you think it doesn't matter, but it does.
All right. Let's get back into this. I think you get the gist to our listening audience. Again, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. We have Norman Kelly, now our political contributor to the show. What were your thoughts on this, Norman, about the last week's debate, the first debate?
Well, I watched it with my roommate and friend, Adrian. And she doesn't watch much political news, so she thought on appearance wise that Romney won, and I said I thought it was pretty much a draw in the sense of content, you know. However, when I go back and watch it, and then when I rethink about what Obama didn't do, making counterpoints, I would say to a large degree that he just conceded the field to Romney. I mean, I just, you know, a lot of people say And I agree, he did not bring up the 47%, and he certainly did not bring up the relentless obstructionism that the Republicans have been doing in the House, you know, and then the Senate. So in a lot of ways, I think, and he just basically ceded the field to Romney. And Napoleon once said that when your enemy is destroying himself, do nothing. And up until the debate, Romney had been destroying himself. So you would think that Obama would come in with the coup de grace or not let him gain any more terrain. And he didn't do it. He just kind of – and I'm kind of curious. I don't buy this thing about the sickness because he's been to Colorado and Denver numerous times. I mean, didn't they have the 2008 Democratic Convention in Denver, if I remember correctly?
Well, you know what? My thoughts on this, I mean, there's a couple of things. Even Ice-T, not that you would value his opinion or anything, but he made some wisecrack about him. You know, maybe he had some weed. Maybe there was some intimacy issues with his wife because of the anniversary that maybe she put it on him too hard or whatever. I mean, just jokingly.
Yeah.
That kind of, all kinds of wacky ideas, wacky notions. I just think that he's running the country and trying to run a campaign. And, you know, that kind of juggling is not realistic to really being able to put on a stellar performance. I mean, even with the his appearance on The View, if you remember,
true,
2 weeks ago he was critiqued because, well, why is it he's speaking before these heads of nation states at the UN? Instead, he opts to go on The View.
Because he's running a campaign.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how do you really juggle all these things,
but, you know,
and then expected to be this stellar debater? I mean, at some point, reality sets in, doesn't it?
Yeah, but as somebody else pointed out, I was listening to a radio show called Diane Reed, NPR, and a woman reporter pointed out that, well, you have to remember, this is the same president who went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner on the eve of the takedown of Osama bin Laden. So obviously he knew that he was planning it. So he goes to that show, and he gave, as he used to say, a boffo takedown of Donald Trump. So obviously, I mean, he can walk and chew gum. So obviously something was going on that day. And I just think his handlers did not – I hope somebody got fired because somebody should have really – prepped him, said, look, Mr. President, you have to be on your A game. You just really, because Romney's going to come out tearing, you know, he's going to be coming out charging, and all you got to do is just like slap him back. And he didn't do it.
I want to go to a point that you made, but first, let me, in deference to Captain, you know, we spoke about this behind the scenes. What are your thoughts on Barack Obama's performance or alleged missteps during this performance?
Well, I thought from a content perspective, agreeing with Norman Kelly, that it was essentially equal. As far as what once you start to look at body posture, I would have to give it to Romney. Romney had a slight edge. But what everyone has to realize with this, I don't know if the audience is into UFC fighting, a championship fight. You have five rounds, more or less, with this. And this is not a sprint. It's also not a marathon. It's more like a UFC prize fight, five rounds. Sometimes you get an early knockout. Romney was definitely behind. Romney gained a bit in this debate, but there's still more rounds to go ahead.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
Obama can get on the stand, and you know that he's a great speaker. He can turn around and knock him totally out. And that's what he has to do going forward, in my opinion, from what I saw already with this debate.
Because now, the next couple of ones, the second one, okay, the next one that's coming, which I believe is this Thursday, that's between the Veeps. However, the next one I think is next week, and that's on foreign policy. And Obama has a much better grasp of that, although he has been weakened, at least administration-wise, in the aftermath of the Benghazi shootout and with the deaths of four Americans. So, because, you know, the Republicans right now are proclaiming that it is a cover-up. So you can expect Romney to go after him on that and
well,
the Arab Spring.
Well, listen, I our audience knows that I am a registered Republican, although I still support Barack Obama, and the captain is an independent. But I will say, in recent years, there's been talk of this set of Republicans being classified as modern Republicans, neocons, whatever euphemism you want to use. They're calling them modern Republicans, and they're not your father's Republicans. So I have to say that they have issues that I can't really respond to. There's a certain methodology, a certain type of hyper religiosity that we see now that I didn't see years ago.
There's something going on differently
with these new sets of Republicans that we've never seen before.
Well, you know why that is? It's because this new set of Republicans are basically the progeny of the Southern Democrats. Because in 1964, the Democratic Party started to promote and stand behind civil rights. And Johnson, made a very explicit plea for civil rights legislation, and he got civil rights legislation passed. And Barry Goldwater was against it, and Barry Goldwater campaign 1964 started the drenching of the Democratic swamp down south into the Republican column. I mean, so this is what you see right now. I mean, this is why the Republican Party is the way that it is. And Nixon in 68 had this thing called the Southern Strategy, where he talked about, states' rights and law and order, all code words, So this is what you have, the slow turning of the solid South into the solid Republican South. I mean, that's why you don't recognize anymore, because some of their soft core kind of racism that Corley Wallace used to talk about, Republican Party had tapped into that. I mean, that's why you don't recognize the Republican Party as it is today, because people also have to remember that the Republican Party, the moderate to liberal wing, which almost doesn't exist, it was that wing that helped pass the monumental civil rights legislation of 1964 and 1965. It was the Democratic Party that was against it. However, it was the Southern conservative wing of the Democratic Party that was against progressive civil rights legislation. So in a sense, the two parties have switched their position in the past 40 years. That's why we don't recognize it.
Well, I was going to mention this, since you brought up Richard Nixon, that, Richard Nixon, people forget that even despite his shenanigans during Watergate, him being perhaps the most corrupt president. I mean, even the Republicans are talking about this presidency, the Obama administration, is the most corrupt administration. Really?
Yeah, but they never show you any evidence of that. It's always pretty scant.
So, we're talking about so much over-the-top hyperbolic discussion, hyperbolic discourse, when even as crooked as Tricky Dick was, he still implemented affirmative action. Now Texas is going through withdrawal from affirmative action even as we speak. But people forget 40 years ago, Tricky Dickey was the one that started it off.
Well, people forget that. And people also don't know that one of the reasons why Nixon did that, there's some argument about this. Some people speculate that one of the reasons why Nixon did this because he realized that it would split the Democratic coalition because basically it started in the labor unions on work sites, construction work sites. There was something called the Philadelphia Plan. And basically there was a lot of fermentation and conflict going on between ethnic white union construction workers and blacks trying to get into those jobs. And a guy you ought to check out historically is the former Reagan he used to be the Secretary of State. I'm blanking on his name right now. Schultz, I think. He had his fingers in doing, I don't want to say manipulating, but if you go back in history and you investigate this, you'll see this guy's head rearing in that. So, I mean, as you said before, it was Nixon that did that. And Nixon also put in the EPA and whatnot. So, I mean, Nixon did some progressive things, But, you know, with Nixon, you always have to look at what is the policy. Is it a policy implication or a political implication?
Going back into the debate, now there's another argument that's been floating around about Barack Obama's performance. And let me just say bluntly, I saw this thing. I didn't see him falter to the degree that, the media are putting out there. I mean, listen, the infamous debate with Gore v. Bush, where Gore literally walks up to Bush's podium in some kind of threatening way or some kind of some kind of alpha dog way. Which, you know, when you look at it now, it is laughable. So for folks to really put this in that same vein or put this in the light of this is the worst debate ever, I think it's disingenuous.
I think
it's a matter of Romney had to come in more passionate.
Yeah.
Because you know, the word that we've used now in Africa Studios from you, Norman, with this whole political autism. That I'm never going to forget that. That's exactly what we saw Romney display. So I thought that maybe Barack Obama was playing possum. Maybe they would let this guy trip on himself. But now what they're saying now is Barack Obama was fearful of being aggressive or passionate for fear of the angry black male syndrome.
Well,
angry
he didn't.
Black syndrome. What is? How do you think that plays in this?
Well, you know, people keep always saying that, but, you know, but Obama didn't have to be that aggressive. I mean, all he had to do was just, like, smack him back a couple of times. Just like every time he said something that wasn't truthful, but just smack him back. You know, he could have said something on the 47%, you know, and if Romney had a comeback to that, Obama should have had a comeback to that. I mean, like I said, I mean, there was so much stuff that everybody kept saying that Romney was just speaking half-truths and outright lies. You know, Obama, who's supposedly a trained lawyer, you know, and not, he should have gone into a lawyerly mode, not a professorial mode, and just stripped everything he said and just like, you know. And like I said, he could have made a big issue out of the fact that, you know, he's the leader. He will be, if he's the president, he will be the leader of a party that had obstructed for 3 goddamn years everything that he was trying to do for the American people. You know, you're going to give the banks a bailout, but we're not going to give the American people a bailout. I mean, he could have said things like that. But for some odd reason, I don't know who was prepping him, but whoever prepped him should have been fired. But I doubt that because nobody up at the top echelons of anything nowadays gets fired.
Okay,
so whoever prepped
him
should have been fired because that's bad prepping.
I tell you what I want to do. Gentlemen, I want to go to a quick musical break. We always like to give our audience heavy discourse as well as heavy music. So when we get back, I want to open up the notion of President Barack Obama's black support. We're hearing more and more of the notion that he may be losing some ground with his own. So I want to unpack this.
Right.
When we get back. All right. First up, this is the Jimi Hendrix Experience. BBC sessions with Stevie Wonder, a young Stevie Wonder and Jimi Hendrix, true genius. We'll be back in a few moments. This is called Jammin'. We'll be right back. All right, folks, pulling out the phaser on that one. That was a historical combination there. That was Stevie Wonder on drums with Jimi Hendrix, the BBC Sessions. All right, getting back to the vault, we're talking to Mr. Norman Kelly and, of course, Captain Kirk. We're still on the debates. And actually, dovetailing off the debates, there's been this discussion for a few months now that perhaps some of President Barack Obama's black support has been eroding. I suspect from his candid admission that he supports gay marriage, so now we're hearing more and more talk that the black religious sector, that group are coming in hard on their congregants and telling them, hey, if your president supports gay marriage, we feel that you should not support the president on this single issue. So now we're hearing more and more about this, and actually I'm a listener of the Rob Redding program on Sirius XM, and Rob Redding had a caller that I want to play this clip quickly for our audience, where he even talks about this difference of opinion or this discord between educated black people and underclass black folk. Now, here we always say lower tier on Afternoon Radio, so the audience knows what I'm getting at. He's saying, this caller was saying that the people who are really supporting Barack Obama are educated black people, and that other black folks are not supporting Barack Obama. So I want to go to this clip, and then I want to unpack it with Norman for a moment, because this is something disturbing to me, I think, as to his alleged erosion of support. So let's go to Rob Redding on educated blacks versus lower tier blacks. Hold on.
Campaign. Out of President Obama's campaign, we're seeing nothing but desperation right now. Lawrence in Texas, you were in mid-sentence and I had to go to break.
Okay, hey Rob, you know, bottom line, it's kind of nerve-wracking and it's kind of insulting for all of us who have supported this black man, and I was one of them in my family. It's sad that don't nobody want to have a come to Jesus moment and admit the truth. We making all these excuses, not me, but a lot of people are making a lot of excuses for why Obama is doing what he's doing, why he hasn't done what he's supposed to do for the black community. Give him another 4 years. You know what? That's so insulting on the face of it. When I stand up and I have to fight racial profiling issues, when I stand up and fight for white brothers, Hispanic brothers who are being dogged out, when I see the UAW and I see all these other unions discriminating against blacks, and all these blacks who have education, let's be real now. We have a class issue among our own people. We have educated blacks and we have regular blue-collar blacks, common folk blacks. The educated blacks are the ones coming out in droves supporting my brother Obama. But think about it. The educated blacks aren't even supporting the blacks who are in desperation in the black communities, who are in jail, in prison. Where's the uproar for all us, all these young black men and women who are incarcerated? Why ain't all these educated blacks fighting a good fight for them? You know, why ain't all these educated blacks taking Eric Holder to task for all that crazy stuff going on in New York, where if you black, you can just be pulled over, searched? Come on now. If we going to sit up and make excuses for Obama, we making really excuses for ourselves and why we not doing what we supposed to do. And I'm fed up with it. If the brother is not going to fight for himself and stand up, I'm not going to fight for him. It's just that doggone simple. Because the bottom.
All right. I think you get the point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about this feeling?
Now, I'll be honest with you. One of my bones I have about Obama is that Obama, in a lot of ways, has been somewhat cynically indifferent towards the black electorate. It's interesting when you watch how Obama has done certain things for other parts of the Democratic coalition. Of the Democratic electorate, but he hasn't done anything for black. I gave you a couple of cases in point. This whole thing about the Hispanic community and immigration and the DREAM Act.
Well, that's a good example. He couldn't get the Dream Act passed, but what did he do? He basically made it so that the Immigration Custom Enforcement people would prioritize criminals. Fair enough. You know, leave young people alone who are going to college and who are on the right path. You know, they will have to deal with their immigration situation at some point, because there's only so much he can do, because he's president of the United States and he just can't, you know, unilaterally make decisions. It's up to Congress. But concentrate on the criminals. Okay. The gay community. Well, what did they do? Well, I mean, they basically had conversations with him, and lo and behold, he came out and made a statement about, you know, finally evolving on gay rights. Finally, last year, passing, ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and then taking a pro-marriage position. Now, the reason why those people, those parts of the electorate got something done is to the same degree why nothing has pretty much gone on in Black America. Black people have pretty much sat on their hands and saying, well, we don't want to make things difficult for the president because he's a Black president, blah, blah, blah. However, they are a part of the Black electorate. They are a part of the electorate that got him elected. You know, they have just as much of rights to demand certain things of him as the other parts of the electorate. Even the people who didn't vote for him or try to get him out of office, like Wall Street, will go up to him and ask and demand and want certain things. So now we have a president. And I just think Obama has been pretty cynical when it comes to Black people, because I think he knows he already has their votes. And now I think the one wedge that could, although I haven't heard that much about, maybe you have, and maybe that clipping is evidence of it, that the one wedge that could possibly be would be his pro-gay stance. That could be for two reasons, because like the guy on that show was saying, he's kind of pissed off. He's upset. Can't use a P word, I think, on radio. He's upset that the president is doing this for one part of the American constituency, but he's not saying and doing very much for the people who actually got him elected. And like I said before, you can look at it two ways. One way is that Black America has not been making any demands. You know, even our elected officials and the Congressional Black Caucus. I even read a couple places where some Black constituents were getting after Black congresspeople who were demanding that the president pay more attention to Black people. So that's the sort of thing that's going on. Now, then you have the moral thing going on. A lot of Blacks probably are upset that this Christian president is going against the Bible. Now, I'm quite sure there's some religious leaders making that argument, which the Republicans, and the Family Research Council would love that argument.
Well, let me tell you something. I have some thoughts on this. Actually, you know what? Let me go to the captain, and then I'll weigh in. I have I have history to think about with how Barack Obama operates. Anytime you are a Black first in anything, I think there comes a textbook to how you're supposed to act.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll elaborate in a moment, but I want Captain to weigh in. Captain, what are your thoughts on this whole notion of Barack Obama having difficulty with his Black electorate? Captain. Let me see if I can bring him in. Captain, you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. One thing I would like to say, as the great Norman Kelly already knows, it's not the popular vote that gets you elected. It's the Electoral College.
True, true.
So that being said, there is a difference, I believe, in with the educated Black people and the rest of the people that are not so educated. What Black people in general have to learn to understand, regardless of whoever's in the White House, whether it's Romney or whether it's Obama, there has to be some form of infrastructure within themselves in order to figure out some form of upward mobility. The president, at the end of the day, is just one person.
Yes, he occupies a powerful position, but we also know there's three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial. We know this. And any time you try to make a move in any way, shape, or form, you can also be blocked by the other branches of government.
True,
I definitely agree with Mr. Kelly that Obama, to a certain extent, expects a large part of the black vote, just to a certain extent. He doesn't necessarily have to work for it. But at the same time, he is the president of the United States. And a lot of times, we have means within ourselves that we just don't organize and present something and bring it to the table and then push it from a consistent basis in order to get anything done.
I mean, the rest of those constituents, as the captain said, I mean, like, rest of those constituents, you know, have organized themselves and they made themselves heard. The black community, everyone, I think, you know, one of the things I pointed out in my book is that there has been a consistent effort on the part of African Americans themselves to self-demobilize. Everything that we do is in the context of the Democratic Party. I don't have a problem. I would even be happy if more black people voted Republican just to get some parity, you know, just to keep the power structure off base. You know, now they know that the black vote is locked totally in the Democratic Party, and black people pretty much have self-demobilized themselves over 40 years, and the only type of political activity goes on within the confines of the Democratic Party. And you also have to make the argument. Well, sometimes the interest of the Democratic Party may not necessarily always be the interest of black people in total. And then you have a class thing going on, as was pointed out. I mean, black America had splintered along some definable class lines. That's been the unintended consequences of the civil rights. And, you know, to a certain degree, I mean, like, it's been a success of the civil rights that you have a growing, burgeoning middle class, but their interests may not be the same as the lower class. And because, you know, different classes have different interests.
You bring up a solid point. I remember a few years ago, actually, when I was a contributor myself to NPR, Variety Today's News and Notes. At that time, this is back in 08, 09, there was a Pew Research poll that talked about this discord between underclass black folk and middle-class black folk.
Yeah, I remember that. Yes. Yeah.
That their values were just diverging.
Yes.
On occasion, the Afro nerd, yours truly, will go into colloquial talk, so pardon my audience. On occasion, I'm going to have to pull back the veneer. There's a nigga way of doing things, and then there's a black way of doing things. And after much deliberation and much research, the captain and myself, niggas stay losing. Let me go into this more deeply. If you look at, as precedent, if you look at the great Jackie Robinson, was under the tutelage of Branch Rickey, was told to remain steadfast, that you're going to get a lot of racial barbs, you're going to get a lot of discord, there's going to be a lot of things thrown at you, but you have to see the larger prize. Mm-hmm. Now, if Jackie Robinson did it, the quote-unquote 50 Cent, Lil Wayne, quote-unquote niggerish way, we would not have seen integration in sports, not just in baseball, but in sports, and dare I say, integration in society.
Right.
So this whole notion of Barack Obama, we need to see him act the fool.
Yeah, and that is what
black folks, some black people, because I believe in being honest about the segmentation,
the fractioning
in black culture.
You know, hold on, Norm, one second. Sorry.
If we're going to be honest, I have never seen that way work.
No.
Dr. King's way. He could have done it the niggerish way. He sat there and took all the barbs and paid the ultimate price. And now you and I, the listening audience, the crew talking right now, were able to walk around with a certain degree of public access because he did not do it the niggerish way.
Do you know that comedy team Key and Peele? Are you familiar with them?
Yeah.
Okay, they've been doing this whole thing about I forgot what they call the other guy, but you had one of them playing Obama, being calm and rational, and the other one going off, his anger negotiator. That's the niggerish way. I've even heard people like Spike Lee, who's a middle class, upper middle class guy, say, you know, he just ought to go off. I'm like, yeah, right. You want the president of the United States to go off and get down a nigger on network television?
Well, you know what? another example. This is what I'm talking about, the dishonesty of people, even the dishonesty of the middle class. What was evidenced a few years ago, the whole beer summit. What precipitated the beer summit was Dr. Henry Louis Gates, who I had, emphasis on the past tense, who I had a great deal of respect for his scholarship, especially when it came down to the genealogy and African history. A lot of respect for Dr. Gates, but he did not. He showed his behind that day.
Yeah,
if he had simply acted like a Harvard-trained professor, showed his ID. I understand that there's a certain indignity, and okay, we thought you were robbing your own house, okay? But it's his neighbors that came out and said, hey, there's a black man in front of the Dr. Gates house. Someone's trying to break in. If he just said, listen, this is my ID, my family photographs in the house, I don't, you know, it's a whole Dave Chappelle skit about having your photos. This robber had enough wherewithal to have his family photos in his house. I mean, but he chose to go out the real black way, the quote unquote real black way, and then we have Beer Summit. And actually, Barack Obama tried to hold up for his boy. He tried to do the real black thing by tribalism.
Yeah,
and he was smacked down.
Yeah.
He was smacked down.
Now,
so anytime Barack Obama tries to do that black thing, he is smacked down.
Obama had to say was, rather than using the word stupid, he should have just said, I think it's odd, and just leave it at that. Arresting a man in his own home, you know, and just leave it at that. Just use the word odd in a very arch manner, and just leave it at that.
That was his first, one of his early presidential missteps. That, I mean, if you're going to be presidential, you have to say, well, we have to wait till the facts come. You have to word it in a, unfortunately, a political way. But he was following his boy.
Yeah.
Who, and no one talks about it from his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I have great admiration for Dr. Gates' scholarship. But on this one, I'll see your mama on the porch.
He was like selling, you know, as they say back in the day, selling wolf tickets to this police officer. I mean, it was just so, all he had to do was say, officer, it's my home, show them my ID. Look, if it's a mistake, I'm glad you're doing your job. Thank you. You have a good day. And just ended the thing. Then once the man left, he could scream and call him all sorts of motherfuckers. I mean, I'm sorry, all sorts of MFs. You know, and just leave it at that. But, like, he let, you know, he just thought, because I'm in my own home, I had a 13-hour trip from China. I think he said to the police officer, you really don't know who I am, do you? Like, you know, getting all indignant, you know.
Well, the secondary story was there was a black police officer that saw the whole thing, and that police officer had the attitude that, oh, boy, here we go. Now, that's another thing that also plays a role. It just wasn't white versus black. But it was another black officer there that was able to see that if cooler heads had prevailed, this would have been a non-issue.
Right, right.
So I going back to what the captain talked about, listen, we saw a few weeks ago that some would say, he's been critiqued on this, that President Barack Obama was somewhat conciliatory toward the Latin audience on Univision, that they held him to the carpet about what they were asking of him. But we have not really seen a cohesive agenda.
No. You won't.
In other words, we don't know. Black people are arguing with Barack Obama for not representing something that we don't know or that he doesn't know he's supposed to be representing.
Well,
what are you asking for?
Yeah. Well, the game plan right now is just to keep his tush in office. I mean, that is the prime African American electorate directive. keep him in office. And if anything else happens afterwards, then we'll deal with that. If the economy is on the uptick and we start to get some jobs, that'll be great, and da-da-da-da. But I think it's going to be interesting because if the president loses, and he has a 50-50 chance of losing, he's always had a 50-50 chance of losing because of the weakness of the economy. It will be interesting to see how Black America reacts, because then you'll have no leadership anymore. I mean, we don't have any right now, but the figurative or the titular head of Black America, you know, will be gone. And what happens after that? Then you get your Al Sharptons again? Then you get your Jesse Jacksons?
Well, you know what? I want to ask you something. Since we've got about 5 minutes remaining, what do we do from this point on as far as the debates? What are your impressions of? You have the Ryan and the Biden debate coming up this Thursday. Then the following week, you're back once again with the town hall format, which might play to President Barack Obama.
Well, yeah, strength. I think Obama is.
What do you think is going to happen here on out?
In the town hall, I mean, I would probably watch the VPs, but I really don't care because the VPs are just going to slash and burn each other because that's what VPs do anyway. Okay, I'm not even going to pay that much attention to that. The town hall one might be a chance for Obama to shine through because he tends to be more personable in those settings, and I think Romney is less personable in those. But then again, you may have to watch it because Romney is on he's on the move, man. You know, he got game, as they say. So you know, that will be interesting to watch. And I don't know. And wait a minute. I guess if it's a town hall one, that probably will not be the one on foreign policy. I would suspect not.
Well, I thought it's both of them are going to be a mixture of the. The economy and foreign policy.
Okay, that could be.
I think it's going to be a mixture. It's going to be mostly foreign policy, but there's going to be elements of the national stories. I think.
Okay, because there are a whole bunch of other issues that are not even being addressed. The climate, you know, gun control or the lack thereof. Maybe even quote unquote the state of race. You know, abortion, you know.
Well, those are issues that, you know, listen, he has his own albatross to wear as well.
Oh, yeah.
To carry. That is with Romney,
mm-hmm.
with Aiken.
Oh, yeah.
Aiken is in the news. You know, he's still around. So
right,
I mean, there's things that
he
could use to his advantage against Romney.
Because
but I'm just wondering. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know what the I don't know what. The polls are saying as of now. I mean, prior to last Wednesday, Obama was on the swing, you know, and I think the race had tightened, which was going to happen anyway. I mean, not unless Romney totally bombed, you know. I suspected that it would have tightened if Romney kept on doing the things he was doing. There was a good chance that Obama might have forged ahead anyway. However, I've always been of the philosophy and the view that given the weakness of the economy, that the race might have tightened anyway, you know, because,
What about the logic of, you know, the employment numbers came in?
Well, yeah, 7.8 now.
But there's a conspiracy afoot, this man can't win for losing.
I know, but see, but that's the Republican and conservative base, you know, to a certain degree. Anything that is favorable towards Obama must be at the behest of the liberal media and conspiracy. You know, these are the people who put the numbers together are career professionals. It doesn't matter who comes or who goes. You know, they are more adhered to, like, you know, accurately reflecting what's going on. And everybody who made that charge, they never showed you any evidence. They just made the charge. And that's how propaganda works. You don't have to show any evidence. Just make this charge and see where it sticks. Everybody, as soon as the number went down, everybody started claiming they cooked the books. But they never showed you how they cooked the books.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to close the shop, unfortunately. Norman, we're going to have to bring it back again.
Okay.
I told you the shows go quickly.
Okay.
they go very quickly. Listen, in about 3 weeks, we'll get back to you again because, listen, it's tidying up. We got about 30 days until this thing is over.
Okay.
So we'll have to be back again to get your knowledge base, sir. We
all
appreciate
right.
it.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, always. No problem. We appreciate it. Folks, it's been real. Again, this is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Captain, any parting shots before we get on up out of here?
Yeah, Mr. Kelly, shout out your movie again.
Oh, the movie is How Washington Really Works, and we're having a 25-day campaign to raise $6,000 at Indiegogo.com/HWRW, How Washington Really Works. The Charlie, you can learn also on the CharlieProject.com, or you can go to Facebook.com, The Charlie Project. Thank you.
Sounds good. Folks, let's go on out with more Urban Alternative. Rufus, Chaka Khan, Music Man. We'll see you next week. Thanks again. Thank you.